here today. Members, I'm going to allow you to introduce yourself. Before I do that, on my left is Ms. Wasima Kamish Ahmad. She's our very able committee coordinator for this committee. And then Ms. Matsinkle, to her left. And then also Ms. Lizette Kluter, who's the senior committee coordinator on behalf of the department, of Parliament here today. Also a special word of welcome and welcome back to the interpreters at the back. Members, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Basil Bevido, and I also want to wish each and everyone a prosperous new year, and I pray to God that South Africa, our country, beloved country, will just see good things and experience good things this year. Thank you.
Good morning, Femora, everyone. My name is Ricardo McKenzie.
Good morning, I'm Pierre Eis.
Thank you very much, members. I'm going to allow the department to introduce themselves.
Good morning, members. Good morning, Chair. My name is Ayub Mohammed. I'm from the Department of Environmental Research and Development Planning.
Good morning, Chair and everybody. Paul Hardcastle, Environmental Affairs and Development Planning.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. I'm Laura Williams, Department of the Premier.
Good morning. Anita Forsu, Legal Services, Department of the Premier.
Good morning. Anwar Ghafoor, Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning.
Good morning. I'm Charmaine Maria. I am from the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning.
Thank you very much to the department. I'm going to allow members of the public to introduce yourselves, and if I may ask if you could just move forward to a microphone just so that we can get it for the record, please.
My name is Mulamli from the SABC Radio.
Morning, members. Christian Lekai, DG Support, .p.
Support, DG Support.
Klaas Stierman, Department of the Premier.
Sivuile Mazanza, right for PMG.
My name is Zuko Mdai. I'm from the South African Communist Party.
How do you switch this thing on? Hi, Marvin Charles from the Cape Argus.
Hi, I'm Tammy Jackson. I'm an intern on Level 5.
Hi, I'm Ryan Smith, the head of research for the DA. That's all.
Thank you very, very much, everyone, and again, a warm welcome. I'm going to hand over to the department. Members, we are here for the briefing on the Western Cape First Amendment Bill, B5 of 2018. So I'm going to hand over straight to the department. I don't know how you're going to handle the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The presentation will be dealt with jointly by Legal Services and the Department of the Premier in conjunction with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning. We will be presenting the first part of the presentation, so Clara will be doing that. So without much ado, I'm going to hand over to Clara.
Thank you very much. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to brief you on the Eastern Cape Constitution First Amendment Bill. The National Constitution was assented to in December 1996 and commenced in February 1997. The Western Cape Provincial Constitution was assented to and commenced a year later. The Provincial Constitution provides that its provisions must not be interpreted as conferring any legislative or executive authority on the province, which is inconsistent with the National Constitution. The National Constitution has been amended by no less than 17 Constitution Amendment Acts. An analysis of all these amendment acts was done, and it was found that concomitant amendments to the provincial constitution were required. The constitution of the Western Cape First Amendment Bill aims to, firstly, amend the provincial constitution to align it with the amendments that have been effected to the national constitution, and secondly, repeal the provisions dealing with the Commissioner for the Environment. My presentation deals with the technical amendments, whilst the presentation by the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning will deal with the repeal of the provisions dealing with the Commissioner for the Environment. The public consultation process on the bill was initiated by the Provincial Parliament when it published the bill in the Provincial Gazette on 12 September last year. Comments were received by the Provincial Parliament directly via email, as well as through an online public participation platform called Dear Cape Town. A total of 3,923 comments were received by the Provincial Parliament. 17 of these were submitted directly, and 3,906 through Dear Cape Town, of which 85 were received after the public consultation period expired. The Dear Cape Town website contributes to the public participation process by providing an online platform where the public is encouraged to comment on policies and legislation. With regards to its call for comments on the bill, the Dear Cape Town website provided a summary of some of the provisions of the bill, which summary included misinformation in certain aspects. The summary, for example, stated that the amendments to the sections dealing with money bills and taxes will give the provincial government the right to impose additional charges and taxes on the citizens of the Western Cape. It also stated that the section dealing with provincial government intervention in municipalities will give the provincial government the same powers as national government by empowering it to appoint an administrator. As will become clear in the next few slides, these statements are factually incorrect, and as a result, the statistics relating to the comments are not surprising. Through the Dear Cape Town website, 3,373 commentators indicated that they do not support the amendments, 487 indicated that they do not fully support the amendments, and 46 indicated that they support the amendments. However, when their comments were analyzed, it became clear that 11 of these, in actual fact, do not agree with the amendments, either in part or as a whole. The 17 commentators who sent emails directly to the Provincial Parliament indicated that they do not support the amendments, or some of them. Whilst analysing the comments, it became evident that the public did not understand that the technical amendments are only aimed at aligning the provincial constitution with the amendments that have already been effected to the national constitution. Some of the comments include that the amendments will lead to the dissolution of provincial government, render national government redundant, and circumvent the national constitution. Some commentators even stated that if the provincial constitution is amended, the national constitution must also be amended. The proposed technical amendments to the provincial constitution will align it with the relevant amendments to the national constitution to avoid inconsistencies and difficulties with interpretation. This slide indicates which sections of the provincial constitution are proposed to be amended and what their national constitution counterparts are. The amendments relate to membership of the provincial parliament, the calling of dates for elections, money bills, interventions by provincial governments in municipalities, taxes, and loans. In addition, expressions used in the national constitution will be taken over in the provincial constitution. The slide that follows compares the wording of the national constitution as amended to the wording of the provincial constitution if the bill is enacted. The proposed amendment to Section 15 of the Provincial Constitution will align it with Section 106 of the National Constitution and will result in a person losing membership of the provincial legislature if he or she ceases to be a member of the political party that nominated him or her as a member of the legislature. Section 106 of the National Constitution was amended in 2003 and again in 2009. The proposed amendment to Section 17 of the Provincial Constitution will align it with Section 108 of the National Constitution. It provides that a proclamation calling and setting dates for an election may be issued before or after the expiry of the term of a provincial legislature. Section 108 of the National Constitution was amended in 1999. The proposed amendment to Section 30 of the Provincial Constitution will align it with Section 120 of the National Constitution by extending the definition of a money bill. Section 120 of the National Constitution forms part of Chapter 6, which deals with provinces. The proposed amendment is identical to the amendment to the National Constitution, which amendment was enacted in 2001 already. The amendment was along similar lines as was then proposed for national money bills, amongst others to distinguish between the national, Section 77, and provincial money bills. It's important to note that, in terms of the National Constitution, the provincial government was already, from February 1997, empowered to impose taxes, levies, and duties at provincial level. In 2001, National Parliament passed the Provincial Tax Regulation Process Act 53 of 2001, with the aim to regulate an intergovernmental process that must be followed by provinces when exercising the power to impose provincial taxes, provincial levies, provincial duties, and provincial flat rate surcharges. It's therefore clear that it is factually incorrect that the bill aims to empower provincial government to impose additional charges and taxes. In terms of the National Constitution, provinces already have this power. The proposed amendments to Section 49 of the Provincial Constitution will align it with Section 139 of the National Constitution. It adds details regarding provincial interventions in municipalities. The National Constitution was amended in 2003. When the relevant amendments to the National Constitution was proposed in 2001, the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development stated in the Memorandum on the Objects of the Bill that the original regime created by Section 139, which stated that only a province may intervene in a defaulting municipality, was out of line with the other provisions in the National Constitution, which depicts government as three distinctive, interdependent, and interrelated spheres. The constitutional relationships between the three spheres are therefore generally direct and not hierarchical. As a result, Section 139 was seen as a constitution anomaly that should be corrected by extending the power to intervening municipalities to national government as well. In addition, provinces have limited capacity in some functional areas such as water and electric supply systems and can do very little when a municipality defaults on its obligations in this regard. In 2002, the same minister stated in a reworked memo that Section 159 had to be amended to A. Extend the steps that a provincial executive may take when intervening where a municipality fails to fulfill an executive obligation, namely the dissolution of a municipal council and appointment of an administrator. B. Simplify the review process by the NCLP. C. Provide that a provincial executive must intervene by taking appropriate steps if a municipality fails to fulfill an obligation to approve a budget or revenue-raising measures necessary to give effect to the budget. D. Provide for recovery plans. And E. Allow interventions by the national executive in the place of a provincial executive in certain cases. The proposed amendments to Section 59 of the Provincial Constitution will align it with Section 228 of the National Constitution by simply deleting references to the term tax basis. The National Constitution was amended in 2001 as the phrase had no definite meaning in the context it appears in. The proposed amendments to Section 63 of the Provincial Constitution will align it with Section 230 of the National Constitution. The National Constitution was amended in 2001 and the obligation to repay loans for current expenditure within 12 months was deleted. Lastly, certain expressions used in the National Constitution are proposed to be taken over in the Provincial Constitution, namely references to the Chief Justice instead of to the President of the Constitutional Court, and correct references in the Causa text to the Afrikaans language.
Just to sum up, Mr. Chair, if you look at the bill, it comprises of 9 clauses. If you take away the last clause, which is the short title and commencement, which is a standard provision in any bill. That leaves 8. Of the 8 remaining clauses, 7 of them are really to align the wording in the provincial constitution with the wording in the national constitution, the mirror provision. So that's how we presented it in that manner. So if you look at the first column, it will indicate the exact wording in the national constitution. And if you look at what is being proposed in the second column, the wording will mirror what's in the national constitution in relation to those provisions. So those are the technical amendments that we are referring to.
All right, thank you very much. Members, I'm going to allow you to ask your questions on these, on this presentation, and then we'll exhaust that and before we go over to the next presentation. Okay, Member Ace, then Member McKenzie, Member Gopin. Welcome, Member Gopin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. I just have a concern listening to the presentation that you're conflating government and parliament, because you started off by saying and showing us that pie chart, saying that there was comments to parliament. Now, that information is the property of this standing committee. I don't know where you got that information from, who gave it to you, because this document, this bill was circulated and published for comment, and you said that on the 12th of September 2018. But that was circulated by Parliament to comment to Mr. Sassman of Parliament, and this committee represents Parliament. You were supposed to today reflect on what was your process as the Department of the Premier, meaning government. And I know you also went through a public process, or you were supposed to go through a public process, then maybe refer it back to Cabinet, get endorsement from Cabinet, and then it's hands off. Because then you refer it to Parliament, and Parliament must take the process forward. I'm very concerned that you're confusing government and Parliament, meaning the legislator. You already, and this committee don't have that information, you already have information from Parliament as government that this committee representing Parliament don't have. And that is a major concern of showing that there's something wrong in how you manage this whole process getting to this point. Chairperson, we will take that further, and I think it's very important because we have a very clear distinction between the different tiers here, or different spheres, where we have the legislative side and the executive side. They today represent the executive side. We will get a briefing on the comments that was received by Parliament, and that's a process that we will put in place. Now let me ask the question then, what was the comment received by the executive, meaning the Premier's Department and the Department of Environmental Affairs, who you're representing here today to tell us that? I think it's not your time and place to tell us what is Parliament saying around that. And I would like to know who gave you that information that's not even in the position of Parliament.
Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. It's on page 3, the Dear Cape Town dossier, that was done by you guys. So to answer the question. And then, Chairperson, I just want to get clarity on one of the amendments on page 13, which is slide number 13, page 7, section 49 under the Provincial Constitution, subsection 2. It says here the Provincial Cabinet intervenes in a municipality under subsection 1B, A. The intervention must end unless it is approved by the National Cabinet Minister responsible for local government affairs within 14 days of intervention. Just clarify that line for me, please. Thank you
very much. Honourable Gopin.
Chairman. You stop at 7. You've talked about the 7 interventions. Just for the record, say, just talked about the 8th one as well. On your interventions, you talked about the 7 technical amendments. Right, but you didn't talk about the 8th one. Oh, it was in the presentation. Okay, thanks.
Honorable Gopi.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on the consultation. Who did the consultation? If the presenter is saying that people misunderstood, that's why we got the answers of 3,373. How can 3,373 people misunderstood that and to get that answer?
Thank you. Members, are there any further questions? All right.
To answer Mr. Ace's question, and I'm going to give it a chance, the comments on DearCat on the website itself, the comments are open to the public there as well. The ones that were submitted to Parliament, they're all on the website, the 3,000 however many comments. I understand your concern about the conflation of the roles, but the purpose of why we analysed the comments was obviously to also prepare a response for the committee going forward. And because normally that's what we do. A matrix is prepared and we have to submit responses to those comments on the comments that are submitted to Parliament. So we've already done the homework in respect of the comments received today, which we received from Parliament. In my years of experience, practically going in historically, that's how it works. The comments are sent because we cannot otherwise. How do we prepare if there's a question from the committee side? I was under the impression, and I think we all were, that the committee members were already in possession of those comments. So I can't answer for that, unfortunately. But the comments were submitted to us because we knew there would be a lot of comments, because when the bill was published for comment by the department, Dear Cape Town also responded with roughly almost a similar number of comments. It was probably a bit more this time. It's on a public website. And we had to analyze it then, and we requested that when the comments come in, and if we have to prepare responses, that we see the comments timeously, because it took weeks to actually go through each and every comment in case there are questions from the committee. And also to see what kind of response there is, so that we know what to prepare coming to the briefing and going forward to assist the committee in future. So that was the response to Mr. Ace's question, and then Clara will answer National Security's question. Consultation,
Chair, to answer the other questions, maybe I can just clarify what the Dear Cape Town website looks like. So it's an online public participation platform where the public is encouraged to submit comments on policies and on legislation. So Dear Cape Town is one for the Western Cape, and I see there's Dear South Africa for national legislation and policies. There's also Dear Tshwane, Dear Ekurhuleni. So it's by the public for the public. So we don't have any influence on what information is submitted on or is on that website. It's by the public for the public. With regards to your question on slide 13 on section 49 to sub A, sub A is proposed to be deleted. Yes. So then it will be aligned to section 139 of the National Constitution. So I think my answer might also have answered your questions, Member Gopi. I'm not sure if I understood you correctly. I thought that the question might be with regards to the Cape Town and how the website works. So if you can just maybe clarify your question if I did not answer it, please.
Honourable Gopi through the chair.
Sorry, Chair. The presenter, firstly, when she presented the slide, said, you will notice by the comments that people were, they misunderstood. That's why we got so a negative comments. So now I want to know, how can 3,000 and odd be misunderstood what was the issue?
Member, if I can give it, I think it's difficult for us to respond as to how the, what the public thought when they commented. But it's social media, essentially. So they'll see whatever's there and then they respond via text or whatever the case is, or via email. So to what extent they actually went and read the bill, read the National Constitution, checked what exactly was in the bill, we can't answer for that, unfortunately. But the extract, I think, and that's what we just wanted to point out to the committee, is that when we analysed the comments, that was the concern, because the extract that was placed on the website said the province is, I'm just in my own layman's words, is now imposing a new provincial tax, for example. And then the responses would come in, one after the other. Oh, we don't support that, we don't support that, we're already being taxed, you know. So it's a social media website, and each and every one of those comments we then had to go and look at to see to what extent we need to formulate a response on it. So the point that we're making is it's not a new provincial, a new power that the province is given to impose a provincial tax. That power has been there since the advent of the National Constitution. It's merely to align the wording in the National Constitution when it was changed in 2001, I think it was, that particular amendment. So it's not a new power. So we just wanted to alert the committee to that. When you look at, as I said, we were under the impression you had the comments. So we just wanted to give you some feedback on our analysis of the comments in preparation for today's session.
Okay, Honourable Ace and then Honourable McKenzie. Is this on this or is it a different follow-up? Because I want to exhaust this.
Chairperson, it's a follow-up to a response.
Honourable Ace, if can I just give Honourable McKenzie the opportunity to, because this is on this point, and then we can come back to your follow-up if you don't mind.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get clarity on Member Kofi's point that she made, which is during the presentation you said that people misunderstood the changes that you want to implement. Those changes were, or whoever publicised the text was done by our Parliament. Was done by
the text on the
website.
We have no control or no input on that website. So the website owner, if I can call it that, manages the content. Yeah.
Okay, now, Chairperson, I just wanted to clarify that because it's important to know. So the website owner uploaded text, which could have been yay or nay, or whatever the content they uploaded would be slanted towards a yes or no, and the people commented on that, misunderstanding what the bill is about, and that you got from your comments, which we have not received, which we'll hopefully receive soon. But I just wanted to get clarity. It wasn't uploaded by someone in Parliament to say, this is the bill. It was third party with their own interest or interpretation of the bill that uploaded this onto their personal website, which is Dear Capture.
All right. Member Ace, and then Member Gopi on that point.
Let me follow up on this one, Chairperson, because when we received the response, it was a bit confused. You said that you have a website, DF Cape Town. Now, the question is, did you get the information from their website that you're not supposed to, of course, because that's their website, or did you get it via any formal channel, meaning a submission to the Premier or a submission to Parliament? Because, I mean, if we start responding to different websites out there, it will not make sense. But I understand why you try and put it here. You try to say it's coming from one group, if I can almost say that. But how did you access the information of that one specific group? Was it via website or was it via a formal comment that was made, whether to the Premier's Department, Environmental Affairs or Parliament?
You can just respond and then I'll give Honourable Gopi, and then members, we will have to deal with the next follow-up and then we must go to the next presentation.
Okay, Oscar, follow up.
consultation. Now, why the figures is put under consultation if there was no consultation? Okay, so the information was accessed basically in all three ways. I stand to be corrected because Clara had to do the analysis and the research, so she can just correct me if I'm wrong to her project. But you can go on, anybody can go onto the website. It's a public website where anybody can go and raise comments. So we did go on the website itself and look at the comments raised there. We also received the comments from Parliament. And what was the third way? And so I must just correct you. It's not that you can't access the website. Nobody has the website's a public website. Anybody can go on there. Any member of the public can go, and you click on whatever the project is, and you can see all the comments. You can see what information they've uploaded. It's a public website. And Clara just wants to add.
Chair. If I can just maybe explain how the website works. If you go on the Dear Cape Town website, they've got different headings of legislation and policies that you can comment on. And then if you click on the specific bill, it starts by giving a summary. In layman's terms, it's written by somebody, the administrator of the website, or I'm not sure who wrote this. It's nobody in government. It doesn't come from our offices. And it provides a summary of the bill. And that is why I said that the summary in certain respects gave factually incorrect information, because that summary stated, and I can quote verbatim, it says, changes to the money bill, this will allow the province to impose additional taxes on the public at provincial level, and so forth. So then you've got, on the website, you've got the summary. And then it says how many active citizens are on the campaign so far. So there you can see how many thousand people commented through this website. And then it gives you comments that you can read through. So you can actually see the comments that have been submitted. And then you can also state that you want to submit a comment. Then it gives you...
sorry, ma'am, in the interest of time... I don't want to, respectfully, I want to ask you to just deal with the question, and because we're not going to get to the second presentation.
Can we move to
Okay.
Can I follow up, Chairperson, please?
You may.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when any government institution comment, they comment on any on a formal process. You don't comment on a website. You comment on formal comments that have been submitted. You've advertised in the Government Gazette, reply to the Office of the Premier. That's formal. There's a cut-off date. There's a cut-off time. And that's what you respond to. There's a parliamentary process. It closed on the 12th of September 2018. They must comment to the Secretary and, in brackets, Mr. Sassman. It's formal. It's submitted there. I know exactly how websites work, but I'm not going to search 100 websites out there to see if they have and might have any comment. It's a formal process. The problem here, Chairperson, is we're not going into the merit and they're going into the merit. They were supposed to discuss and explain to us, but they were also supposed to explain to us what was the first part of the process, meaning the government part of the process, where they advertised, where they received comments. How many comments did you receive as the Department of Environmental Affairs and Planning, as the Department of the Premier, not Parliament? And it's wrong, Chairperson, I state that again, for them to have, number one, the information from Parliament, and then the argument is we can access a website. It's got nothing to do with a website. We here, with the business of Parliament and any formal submission within the cut-off time, 12th of September 2018, to Parliament. How they got the documents of Parliament, they're not here to justify it. We will take it through a hearing process. We will take it through listening to the people out there. Then we will decide how do we take it forward. And then, of course, you can discuss the merits of the issue. I want to go back to the first phase of government. Please help me. What was the comment that you received, and how did you respond to the issues of government? And while you did say something around taxes, maybe I can just ask a question around that, Chairperson. That's the one where MEC Mayor last year, I think it was the budget, said he's done research, he's going to introduce a fuel levy. And the question would be, that fuel levy, is it within the framework of national and provincial legislation? Will this amendment support it or not support that fuel levy? I know when we got to the adjustment budget, you would recall his statement, he said, no, I'm abandoning that, I'm not going to take the route of the fuel levy. But I need to understand within what taxes is the fuel levy living that was referred to. But the first question is more important. I want to understand what is the comments, what was the cut-off date that government received comments, and what was the decision of cabinet to take it forward to get it to parliament. That's a different arm of government. Thank you.
I'm going to, before you respond, members, can I please ask that you work with me, because we press for time. We need to finish this committee by 1 o'clock. So I'm going to ask that all questions now be asked, so that we exhaust this presentation so we can move over to the next one. Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. I just, you know, on the first comments of Member Ace, I think I was partly covered, where we just trying to understand Dear Cape Town, it's not about the website. It can be Dear Tswane, Dear Guguletu, Dear Kailicha. It's not about the website. It's about how do their comments ended up here? Because as you know, there's, as Member Ace explained, there's a formal parliamentary process. We've done many bills in this parliament in the last 5 years. You advertise in the newspaper, you say, Paul, Tabo, please give a comment in the next 2 or 3 weeks, that comments get finalized. We don't go on websites and search for input on a government. It doesn't work like, it's never worked like that, at least for the last 4.5 years, last 4 years, 8 months when I've been in this parliament. Unless you can say that comments was formally submitted through a public participation process to you in a formal comment which we'll get from parliament. So it's not about Dear Cape Town. It's about how does that become part of a consultation process in documents in front of us where we as the legislature have not advertised, whether we advertise on Dear Cape Town, Dear Tswane, Dear Guguletu, that has not been part of this formal process. So we cannot as a committee take this formally into account because it wasn't submitted to us unless it was submitted through your process, but not through a process where somebody went on a website and looked for comments. That's not a formal process. And last point, on the fuel levy, I think, Chairperson, that's completely different, but it was discussed in a finance committee, which Member Ace also sits on, so I don't think that's part of the particular process. That's just my point.
All right. Member Kibida.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is going to be very short, I think. At the crux, at the very bottom of this issue and this problem lies the, it's a qualitative issue. Looking at the website as a social media platform, do we respond to that or do we respond to customized and formalized documents, etc., as raised also by Member Ace and McKenzie? For me, the whole issue is about how informed and au fait and sensitized are people with the bill itself to make informed decisions, especially when you have free access to a social media platform, and then you can express yourself in any way, in terms of quantity. Are we looking at figures, are we chasing figures, or are we looking at the qualitative type of response that we get? Thank you, Chair.
All right. Members, I'm not going to entertain a response to the website, because Parliament, as members have rightly pointed out, Parliament will embark on its own public participation process, and that decision will be taken after this committee. So I want you to deal with the questions raised in the presentation with regards to the technical amendment, so that we can move on to the second presentation.
Just perhaps one response on the fuel levy issue, and that is perhaps that is a question for another committee. I most certainly don't have all the information on any fuel levy that is being imposed, so I can't really answer. Safe to say that you wouldn't require this amendment in order to impose a fuel levy. That would be my off-the-cuff response. If the National Constitution already provides for any province, for that matter, to impose a levy. But perhaps just one very important, I think I just want to clear something up, Mr. Chair, if I may, and that is I don't want to go back to the website, but I think there's a misunderstanding that I need to clear up. The comments from Dear Cape Town came, were submitted to Parliament as their comments. They were formal comments submitted to this Parliament as comments on the bill. So that's where we got there.
All right, thank you. Members, I'm going to hand over to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning for their presentation.
Good morning, members. Now we're excited. Okay, firstly, I'm Ayub Mohammed, and I'm here. My brief was apologies from our HOD, Mr. Piet van Sail. He apologized. He said having to attend the family funeral. Otherwise, he would have been here today. We've been asked to brief the committee on the repeal of the Commissioner for the Environment. That was the 8th Amendment that is being sought. That's the part two of the presentation. Basically, the presentation will concern, I'll deal with the background and the status, because this is a briefing session as to the status of the Commissioner. We'll deal with the history of the amendment process to date. I'll briefly cover the functions and the duties of the Commissioner from the Constitution of the Western Cape. We'll then present a response to those duties and the functions of the Commissioner in the context of the prevailing legislative regime. We'll also respond to the public participation process, and the response that we're going to give is in response to when it was advertised the first round by government, and then also having considered the rest of the comments that had come in that was submitted to us by the Provincial Parliament. We'll then cover what the Commission will cost, and then we'll conclude on some of the on the status of the Commissioner. Now, Section 71 to 77 of the Provincial Constitution establishes the Commissioner. It is binding on the Provincial Legislature and the Executive. However, Provincial Parliament may replace, amend, or repeal the Constitution if it deems such an appointment to be undesirable. So that power lies within the Provincial Parliament and solely in the sphere of the Provincial Parliament. From the Department's point of view, given the history of the amendments to date and the processes that have been undertaken both by the government and by the Parliament, it is our opinion that it is undesirable for the reasons that we will present, and then it will be up to the committee and Parliament to decide on that. We are of the opinion it is undesirable because we believe it is a duplication of the roles and responsibilities that exist within existing legislation, and that it will consume scarce state resources. Now, like I said, the Constitution of the Western Cape was assented to on the 15th of January by the Premier of the Western Cape, but ever since then, the Commissioner for the Environment has never been appointed. The Commissioner for the Environment is also listed as a Schedule 3C public entity in terms of Section 47(1)(b) of the Public Finance Management Act, and it is listed within the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning, and that's why it appears in our annual performance plan and our annual reports at the end of each year. So if we go to the history, and this is now going way back, and bear with me because I wasn't around and involved with the Commissioner at that stage, but I'm looking at historical records that we had to consult. Now, Cabinet in 2001 had given in principle approval for the production of a draft bill that supports the Commissioner, because in terms of the Constitution there must be legislation that supports the Commissioner. That bill was published for comment by the then Parliament at the stage. Right? And an organizational design was developed at that stage, and in that stage the organizational design consisted of one Deputy Director General, two Assistant Directors, an Admin Clerk, and two Admin Clerks, basically a PA and an Admin Clerk. And then there was a gap which is difficult to fill. But in 2005, so we're jumping from 2001 and 2002 back to forward to 2005, there was then a briefing to the Standing Committee of Community Development on the status of the Commissioner. And in the same year, 2005, the then Minister of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning prepared a cabinet memorandum to request the suspension of the Commissioner. That's what we have on record. Apparently that did not serve. It didn't go anywhere. In 2007, and that was on the basis of the duplication of functions. So way back in 2005, that commission, the minister identified that there's a duplication of the commissioner will be doing a function that is duplicated in existing legislation and requested that suspension. In 2007, DEA and DP, that's Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning, also requested the delisting of the commissioner as a Schedule PC public entity. And the reasons for that was also the promulgation of national legislation. And then I need to jump ahead into 2009, because in 2009, the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning requested a legal opinion on the desirability of appointing commissioner. We received that opinion from Advocate Farnham at the Cape Bar, and he confirmed the promulgation of the legislative of all the legislative reforms that had occurred. But he also said that the amendment of the Constitution should not be taken lightly, and at the end, his opinion in terms of that, the opinion of the advocate in terms of that opinion, that it would be preferable rather to amend the Constitution to omit the appointment of the commissioner when it is appropriate or so desirable to do so. So the advice that was given at that time was to make it discretionary. And it was under that basis that the amendment of the Constitution then proceeded. Right. So in September 2010, the draft first amendment bill was published. And that was to bring about certain technical amendments, which is what was dealt with in the first part of this presentation. And then it was to amend the provisions relating to the Commissioner for the Environment and the Children's Commissioner to allow making the appointment by the Premier discretionary. So as and when it is desirable to do so. Between 2010 and 2013, there was a consideration of the comments received, and during that period, there was also some special Cabinet Constitutional Review Committee, and then going back to October 2014, the bill was introduced to Provincial Parliament. In February 2015, Provincial Parliament published the bill and conducted public hearings, and some of us were part of those hearings, and there was very few opinions that was received, and only 4,000 comments were received at that stage. But there was a legal opinion that was provided by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor who indicated that the discretionary approach should not be supported and that the Commissioner should rather be excised in totality if the Constitution was to be amended. Further deliberations took place, and in July 2015 the bill was withdrawn to conduct further analysis to develop appropriate policy for the Children's Commission and the Commission for the Environment. And that analysis including an update of the 2009 Parliament opinion, and which confirmed then that duplication exists that renders the Commissioner for the Environment discretionary, and the Children's Commissioner was then separated out of that. In 2016, that decision was taken to separate the Children's Commissioner from the Commissioner for the Environment, and as you are aware, the Children's Commissioner is proceeding. And in 2017, Cabinet then approved the drafting of a new bill to bring about the technical amendment, which is still the Part 1 amendment that is being sought, and then to repeal the provisions relating to the Commission environment. So a decision was taken in terms of that. In January 2018, that draft bill was published for comment, and in September 2018, as was reflected on early, the Provincial Parliament published the bill for comment, and the bill was referred to the Standing Committee, which is now in front, which is what you are. So in terms of the brief of the Commissioner, it is important for me at least to just look at what the Commissioner is supposed to do in terms of the Constitution, and I beg your indulgence on this. Might be a bit laborious, but Section 71 of the Constitution says there is a Provincial Commission for the Environment that is established. Section 71.2, etc., goes on to say that the Commissioner's geographical jurisdiction is restricted to the Western Cape Province, and in the exercise of the powers and functions, the Commissioner must ensure the conservation of the environment and give attention to the need to balance the goals of environment conservation and sustainable development. So a lot of terminology has also changed since the promulgation of this, or the assenting of this Constitution, because it's more wording like using sustainable development, etc., and not environmental conservation. We don't use those terms anymore. Section 71, as you go on, Section 70, this is right. Then the Commissioner is independent, and other provincial organs of state must support the Commissioner. 71.5, it says the commissioner must not be interfered with, and the commissioner, then we go on to the actual functions of the commissioner. The commissioner, in terms of 72, the commissioner must monitor urban and rural development, which might impact on the environment, but there's no definitions given to urban and rural development in the constitution. Yeah. Then 72.1b, the commissioner may investigate complaints in respect of environmental administration after the definition of environmental administration, and the commissioner must recommend a course of conduct to any provincial organ or state or municipalities whose activities it has investigated. So that deals with the power of the functions of the commission. How must the commissioner act? The commissioner must act in accordance with the principles of cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations referred to in Chapter 2 of the Western Cape Constitution, but then since then there's also been the Intergovernmental Frame and Relation Act, which has been published, which we need to deal with. And then the commissioner may have additional power that is provided for intervention legislation, and that's the legislation that was withdrawn. In terms of 73, when the commissioner has made recommendations to that provincial organ of state, to a provincial organ of state, that organ of state must report to the commissioner on its actions in response to the recommendations within a reasonable time. And any provincial organ of state who refuses or fails to implement the commissioner's recommendations must upon request furnish the commissioner with written reasons for such refusal or failure. Now this means that the commissioner is obligated to monitor adherence to its recommendations, but important to note that provisions only apply to provincial organs of state. Does not apply to municipalities. So the scope of the commissioner is now actually being limited to just look at provincial entities. You can make recommendations to municipalities, but you cannot compel them to report to you. In terms of section 74.4, now we deal with the reporting of the commissioner. The commissioner must submit an annual report to the provincial parliament on its activities and obligations. The commissioner also needs to submit its recommendations in terms of its investigations, and then provincial parliament may call upon the commissioner to report at any other time as well. So the commissioner is effectively accountable to provincial parliament, and provincial parliament is obligated to monitor and evaluate the performance of the commissioner. So it is a fairly independent body. Section 75 continues in terms of who can the commissioner be? The commissioner must ordinarily be a resident of the Western Cape. So we can't import anybody to be that commissioner. They must be a fit and proper person. And then in terms of 75.1c, the appointment of the commissioner, that commissioner must comply with the requirements imposed in terms of provincial legislation. So if we don't have that provincial legislation, we can't actually appoint the commissioner because we do need to run that, and we don't have that. Who needs to appoint the commissioner? The commissioner must be appointed by the commissioner must be nominated by a committee composed of all parties represented in the provincial parliament and who decide to participate. The premier must appoint the commissioner after they're nominated by a committee of parliament, and that nomination must be approved by Parliament by a resolution adopted with a supporting vote of at least 60% of the members of the Provincial Parliament, and the rules of and orders of Provincial Parliament must provide for the involvement of civil society in the nomination process. So Parliament will have to go through the process to call on candidates to be for candidates to be appointed to make that nomination, so there must be a public participation process. Just importantly that a similar process is not prescribed for the Commissioner for Children. Parliament doesn't have to do that for the Commissioner for Children. The Commissioner is appointed for a term of 3 years and is only renewable once. And then the Commissioner may be removed from office by the Premier on grounds of misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence. And if there's a finding of Parliament, so Parliament needs to adopt a resolution calling for that person's removal as the commissioner. So the power to appoint and the power to suspend and the power to remove sits with the premier on recommendation of the provincial parliament. So that is the way the sections of the constitution is constituted, and that was just an overview of the sections of the constitution. If we go on to the department response to the duties and functions of the commissioner. Our response in terms of the duplication is based on the plethora of legislation that has been promulgated since 1998 when the Constitution was assented. We contend that there is an overlap of the duplication of roles and functions that is provided for in national and provincial legislation. Just as member, as you've got your NEMA there, this is the latest bundle of environmental legislation. Two thick bundles, and this doesn't even include the planning and the other administrative legislation that exists. That's all the legislation that has been enacted since 19, that has been in place that deals with the environment since 1999. Some of us will remember that we had the Environment Conservation Act, and under that you had the Environmental Impact Assessment Regulations that deals with listed activities and the EIA regime, and that has evolved and is still implemented today. In 1998, in November, importantly, we had the NEMA, the National Environmental Management Act, and then there was a suite of SEMAs, the Specific Environmental Management Acts that also got promulgated under NEMA, such as the Protected Areas Act, the Biodiversity Act, the Air Quality Act, the Integrated Coastal Management Act, and the Waste Management Act. On the other side of the coin, that is functional legislation, and then as you talk about administrative legislation, you've got the Public Protector Act. We had LUPO in the past, which was replaced in 2014 by the Western Cape Land Use Planning Act that we'll reflect on. In 1998, you had the Constitution. 1998, you also had the National Water Act. You had the PIA, Promotion of Access to Information Act. You had the PAJA, Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. In 2000-2005, the IGRFA Act, Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. We also had the Western Cape Healthcare Waste Management Act, the Western Cape Biosphere Reserve Act. In 2013, importantly, the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act that has changed the face of planning, land use planning in the country and spatial planning in the country. And then in 2014, you had the Western Cape Land Use Planning Act, which repealed LUPO and put in place a completely different planning regime. Some legislation that must still be promulgated is the National Environmental Laws Management Amendment Bill. The fourth Amendment Bill is coming before the Standing Committee of this government, of this Parliament, Standing Committee of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning within the next 2 weeks. We have the Carbon Tax Bill, we have the Aquaculture Development Bill, and we've got the Western Cape Biodiversity Bill that is going to repeal and replace the Western Cape Nature Conservation Board Act and also the old ordinances that deals with nature conservation. We also have the Marine Spatial Planning Bill. We've got the PD-Alpha, what we call the Protection and Development of Agricultural Resource Bill. There's a Climate Change Bill. And there's an Integrated Planning Framework Bill that's supposed to deal with all planning at provincial, national and municipal level. Some of the policies that we've had since 2000 that has been issued and published, the White Paper on Environmental Management, the SDG Goals, the Sustainable Use of Biodiversity, National Strategy for Sustainable Development, National Waste Management Strategy, etc., etc., White Paper on Spatial Planning and Land Use Management, Integrated Urban Development Framework, Environmental Impact Assessment Management Strategy for South Africa, and then we've got the Provincial Spatial Development Framework that has been published in 2014. So if we analyze those bills and we look at what they contain, so the National Environmental, the Provincial Constitution says that there's a Commissioner Environment. Our contention is that the function is currently catered for, and I'm going to present just a brief snippet of what each of the legislation pieces say, and I think we will probably have more engagements on this. The National Environmental Management Act established national advisory committees. So there's a committee that oversees that. The Waste Management Act established the provincial waste management officer to coordinate waste management matters in the province. The National Air Quality Act also established provincial air quality officers to coordinate air quality management. The National Integrated Coastal Management Act establishes provincial coastal management committees, and the coastal management plans that get approved by that committee. In terms of the Biodiversity Act, SANBI has been established through the Biodiversity Act, and SANBI the duty of SANDBs to monitor biodiversity in the country. The National Water Act establishes the catchment management agencies, and in Western Cape you've already got the Beeder Forest Catchment Management Agency, also water use associations, and there's a water tribunal for which disputes can be referred to. And in the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act establishes municipal planning tribunals who take planning decisions at the municipal level, and province has no role to play within those decisions. In terms of the Western Cape Western Cape Land Use Planning Act, LUPA, what we call LUPA, the provincial minister must monitor provincial land use planning and the impact of one or more of the following matters on provincial land use planning: disaster management, housing, regional planning and development, urban and rural development, tourism, protection of biodiversity, heritage, agricultural resources, and in infrastructure, water, climate change, renewal, energy production, and economic development. Those are the matters that is actually in Schedule 3, of the Constitution, Schedule 3 of the, 4 and 5 of the Constitution, that is concurrent provincial matters. So land use plan, the 2014 land use planning, it actually covers the urban and rural parts of what the commissioner should do, and that is a function that we have, regional planning and development and the protection of biodiversity, heritage and agricultural resources. In terms of the commissioner having to ensure conservation of the environment and the Western Cape, and to give attention to the need to balance the goals of environmental conservation and sustainable development, it is our contention that it is advocated for by the NEMA principles. Now, the NEMA principles in Chapter 2 of NEMA must be taken into account by all decision makers when it affects the environment, not just the competent authorities dealing with environmental issues. Similarly, SPLUMA and LUPA also have sustainable development principles that must be considered when decisions are taken. And since 1997, like I said before, the EIA regime has been put in place, and there are listed activities and specified listed activities that have impact on the environment, for which there are defined regulatory processes that require the consideration of sustainable development. So it's taken into account in those regulatory processes. At the spatial planning level, SPLUMA and LUPA requires the development of spatial development frameworks, SDFs, and that must be done at the national level, the provincial level, the regional levels, and municipal levels. And the National Environmental Management Act also calls for the development of environmental management frameworks, and all of these must be considered, must be based on the consideration of sustainable development. In terms of the commission having to be independent and impartial, the opinion is that there's been legislation that deals with this. So, for example, you've got the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, and that act, the PAJA, governs administrative actions of government to ensure transparency, and the ultimate recourse is to the High Court. So the PAJA actually now, if you're talking about environmental administration, decision making in terms of environmental administration needs to be transparent, it needs to be open, and it needs to be take into consideration all the relevant considerations, because PAJA says any person may institute proceedings in a court for judicial review of the admin action if the administrator who took it was not authorized to do so i.e. they acted without due process, they acted under delegation which they did not have, or they were biased or unreasonably suspected of bias. If they didn't comply with any procedure or condition, or if the action was procedurally unfair, if it was influenced by law, and if the, So there's a few, if it was taken in bad faith, if it was arbitrary or capricious, or if it contravenes any other law, etc. And even if a public body fails to take a decision in terms of budget, you can also seek recourse in a court of law. So PAJA covers the environmental administration, which I think might have been a concern when the Constitution was developed. Then you also have the Public Protector Act, 1994, very old, and it's a very current and contemporary act that is used till today. And the Public Protector may investigate any conduct in a state affairs or public administration in any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper or to have resulted in the impropriety or prejudice, and to report that conduct and to take appropriate remedial actions. And importantly, the public protector has the power to investigate any sphere of government and any organ of state and any state-owned entity that is alleged to have been or suspected to be have taken improper action. So it's not just limited to the provincial entities. In terms of that the commissioner must monitor rural and urban development, and I'm repeating what we said earlier, but NEMA allows for the NEMA, and that is the National Environmental Management Act, allows for the development of environmental implementation and management plans and the consideration of the principles in NEMA. And those principles in Section 2 of NEMA must be taken into account in the preparation of any plan, policy, program, including the establishment of the IDP and the development objectives. NEMA also requires the state of environment reports to be compiled by national and provincial state of government. The EIPs are compiled annually and must be reported on annually. And then there's also the usual medium-term strategic framework for the environmental sector, which contains the objectives against which we'll report, and that's associated with urban and rural development. In terms of the Western Cape Biosphere Reserve Act, all land uses and land use plans within the biosphere must comply and be consistent with the framework plan concerned. So there are other plans that actually puts that must consider urban and rural development, and especially the Western Cape Land Use Planning Act requires the provincial minister to monitor regional planning and development and urban and rural development. Those are peremptory requirements of the Land Use Planning Act for the Western Cape. In terms of the commission having to investigate complaints in respect of environmental administration, now the commissioner can. We don't have the legislation, but the legislation for the commission hasn't been promulgated. But what exists in the current legislation is NEMA allows for conciliation and arbitration and alternative dispute mechanisms for people who are dissatisfied with decisions taken by environmental administrators. So it is currently catered for. If you need to complain, there are places that you can complain. NEMA also establishes the Environmental Management Inspectorate, or the Green Scorpions, and they can monitor and enforce environmental legislation. So they can be immediately contacted if there's a suspicion of environmental harm, and they will investigate and they will they can monitor the enforcement of environmental legislation. In terms of furthermore, in terms of investigation complaints, NEMA also establishes the duty of care, and that's Section 28 of NEMA, and it requires that the Director General or the Directors for Mineral Resources or the Provincial Head of Department may investigate any activity that is has caused or may cause significant pollution or degradation of the environment, and they can issue directives and compliance notices to the effect that you can cease any operational activity, you need to investigate, evaluate, and assess the impact of those. Report on those measures that you need to take those measures taken at a given date, and you need to comply with that. And if you don't comply with the Section 28 directives or Section 31L compliance notices, it's actually an offence, and we could charge you in court. And then NEMA also provides another alternative remedy, and that is that interested parties or group of parties may apply to court in respect of an environmental breach or institute private prosecutions. And we do actually have that, the National Prosecution Authority has failed to prosecute. We have had groups of people taking on certain sectors and privately prosecuting contributors. Then in terms of the Western Cape Monitoring and Support of Municipalities Act, now this for me is an interesting and I think it's a unique piece of legislation that's only in the Western Cape, and it actually supplements the IGFRA Act and also the Provincial Constitution, because under this Act, and there was some talk about it in the previous amendment, under the Western Cape Monitoring and Support of Municipalities Act, the Provincial Minister may investigate municipalities who cannot or do not fulfill a statutory obligation or where allegations of maladministration, fraud, corruption or any other serious malpractices is alleged to have occurred. And this is done in conjunction with the Municipal Systems Act. So the Western Cape government holds that it actually has legislation dealing with non-performance of municipalities and with consequences for that. As I said before, in terms of the Public Protector Act, the Public Protector may investigate on his or on own initiative or on receipt of a complaint any of the affairs directed at government in terms of maladministration, abuse of powers, improper or dishonesty, improper or lawful unlawful impeachment or an omission. So the Public Protector can investigate any conduct in state affairs or public administration in any sphere of government. And the Public Protector must report on that conduct and also take appropriate remedial action. And then the Public Protector is not limited to environmental matters. They can take any matter under consideration. The Public Protector can also, interestingly, also use mediation, conciliation, and negotiation and other appropriate remedies to resolve matters. So we do have the Public Protector coming to us at some times, giving us complaints and then dealing with it. In terms of the Commissioner having to recommend a course of conduct to any provincial organ of state that has been investigated, like we said earlier on, there is the Section 28 and the Section 31L directives and compliance respectively, and the environmental management inspectors are empowered to investigate contraventions in terms of NEMA and CEMAS, and that provides for penalties. So those types of actions is covered, and the Public Protector can also issue a report.
So if you can just ask me a question. On slide 41, he jumped from 15 to 17. Is there a slight message, or is this just typing error?
Probably just typing.
Okay, thank you.
And then in terms of cooperative governance, the national, like I said, in terms of previously, there's the integrated environmental implementation plans, environmental management plans, and there's also environmental management cooperation agreements where the minister and every municipality can enter into cooperation agreements regarding principles or regarding the setting of standards, measuring targets, and monitoring and reporting requirements. In terms of also cooperative governance, like I said earlier on, there's the IGI, Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. But in the environmental sector, particularly important is that we actually have a very functioning and a very effective IGR forum. We have a MIN-MEC structure where the minister, the MECs, the SOEs, and even the municipalities are involved in. That's the ministers and all the MECs around the country. We have a MINTEC, which is the DG of Environmental Affairs and all the provincial heads of departments. And then there are working groups which has been established, and this is a functioning these are functioning structures that meet on a quarterly basis to discuss matters of environmental concern. And then you also have the specific Environmental Management Act, which makes provision for the specific structures, like I said, the Air Quality Officers Forum, the Waste Management Forum, etc., etc. But then we also have, in terms of reporting, you've got your Public Finance Management Act reporting, where the department is required to report on its activities, department and the organs of state being required to report on its activities and objectives set in the MTSA. And then the NEMA requires that the EIPs be reported on in 3-year cycles, and then the national and provincial state of environmental reports also need to be reported on a 5-year cycle. Now, the next section of the presentation that you have is a response to the public participation. And I think the slide that you've got, the slide number 47, that was the comments that was that Clara and Anita referred to earlier on. When we did this response, we note that the concerns that were raised earlier on, but the bill was advertised by government in the Provincial Gazette of 6th of April 2018, and there was media notices provided in all four the publishing four newspapers in the province, and it was also forwarded by registered post and by email to SALGA and all municipalities. Now this is when, in terms of the context, when government published the bill, when the provincial cabinet published the bill. And we've had a look at the comments that had come through, and at that stage the DOK exam people also coming from a place on the information that they had from the website. So this is a bit of a, our interpretation of the comments that were received then and the comments that we've received now. And I'll just briefly go through it. Some of the issues and concerns that were raised, for example, is what is the how will the commissioner influence the mandate of the three spheres of government? Now, in terms of the three spheres of government and the distribution of power, planning is a function that is shared by all spheres of government. The commissioner cannot intervene and cannot change that. Environmental management is a concurrent and concurrent national and provincial mandate, and the commissioner will not be able to influence that. And the commissioner will not contribute to increase centralized decision making. That was some of the concerns that had come out. And the commissioner will not provide any additional power or functions to national government. In terms of the checks and the balances that they, that the public had, at that stage said that they were concerned about, the commissioner will not be able to influence the regulatory process and will have no administration powers over those regulatory processes because there are competent authorities that deal with that and only they can deal with that. Those regulatory processes already contain prescribed public consultation processes and the commissioner can't influence that. There's also prescribed appeal provisions that is in place and that's what the law allows. And then these will continue irrespective of whether there is a commission or whether there isn't a commission, because that is what the, those are peremptory requirements of the, of the of the legislation. In terms of the comments about professional expertise and competence in terms of environmental and planning administrators. Now, in terms of the commissioner having time to ensure standards relating to environmental and planning, there's already legislation that prescribes such standards. The Planning Profession Act of 2002 has established the South African Council of Planners, and those of us that deal with planning, we need to be registered with those with that body, and it sets registration standards for the behavior and the professional conduct, and there's also disciplinary matters. In terms of SPLUMA and LUPA, decision makers must first consider the input of a registered professional planner before they can actually take a decision. So it's entrenched, it's embedded in the legislation. In terms of NEMA, the 24 registration authority has been established by the National Minister in 2016, and that, that authority is called IPASA. It's a single registration authority for all environmental assessment practitioners who must be registered by February 2020. And only registered practitioners will be able to conduct and review environmental impact assessments. And in terms of the Natural Sciences Professional Act of 2003 makes provision that they need to, you must be SACNAP registered if you want to operate in that sector. In terms of the monitoring function of the commissioner, that was raised. The public protector is there, and then there's also the standing committee who have oversight functions over the government departments. In terms of IGR, mentioned that the Western Cape Monitoring Support Act exists. There's also the Local Government Municipal System Act, and there's also the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act that exists. The IGR Act also talks to about intergovernmental relations in terms of ensuring that there is intergovernment cooperation. The IGR Act and the forums that I mentioned, which includes municipalities, exist. And then in terms of reporting on environmental affairs, we, the departments have, and government has, the medium-term strategic frameworks. We've got an outcome 10 delivery agreement. There's the national and provincial environmental state of environment reports. There's implementation plans. There's the strategic plans. And so these are all entrenched in statutory reporting cycles. In terms of public recourse and participation and transparency, I've mentioned that we've got PAJA and we've got PAYA, and we've got at the strategic planning levels, we've got all those IDPs, STFs, SEAs, etc. They must all contain public participation process. So those plans are not done behind closed doors. It must include public participation. And the regulatory processes also include public participation, like the EIAs and the waste management licenses, etc., and also the planning decisions. There's also a provincial and national environmental crime hotline that people can complain to. And then we've got the inspectorate, and then finally there's also the appeal and review provisions that exist. So decisions are always appealable to the minister, and if you are still dissatisfied with the decision of the minister, you can approach the court in terms of FAJA. So we do believe that those functions exist. There's also the advisory forum that has been established that can be approached, and that's in the Office of the Public Protector. In terms of costing, the 2001 costing that was developed, I alluded to earlier in terms of the one DDG, the two assistant directors, the one PA and one admin clerk. We do not agree that this is sufficient at this stage. We rather, if the commission is going to proceed, the structure of the Western Cape Police, we use the structure of the Western Cape Police Ombudsman to look at an appropriate structure, and the financial funding required for the effect of the functioning of the commission amounts to 12.85 million rand in year one, and that includes a startup cost of 3 million rand for office space and all those types of things and equipment and facilities, 10.4 million rand and 11.5 million rand in the MTF, and then obviously it's going to increase with inflation and COE increases that goes around, and that is based on the costing of a one DDG, a personal assistant, a deputy director, two assistant directors, an admin officer and four investigators. So it amounts to quite a significant sum of money. So in conclusion, and this is our conclusion, is that national legislation and provincial legislation adequately provide for the protection of the environment. There is sufficient enabling provisions, and the filling of the vacancy is not desirable because it would involve an overlap and duplication of the roles and functions provided in national and provincial legislation. It will not address governance gaps, the governance gaps that exist, and it will consume scarce state resources. On the ombud-like functions that is attributed to the commission, this is the final slide. The type of issues raised are not the issues that the commission can deal with without duplicating the role of some other function in government. There is a limitation on the extent of the power of the commissioner. So, for example, the commission cannot investigate national departments, and its findings are limited to provincial entities. So an example of that, for example, is the Department of Mineral Resources in terms of the One Environmental Management System. One Environmental Management System takes all EIA decisions and mineral prospecting and mining right decisions. The commissioner won't be able to influence that because that's taken at the national level. And then the commissioner is also not a decision-making body, nor an appeal-making body. It will only be able to make recommendations. And that is the conclusion of this briefing session to the standing committee. In terms of what we have been told to do.
Thank you very, very much for that presentation, members. Honorable Ace.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for a very long presentation. Chairperson, I want to start off and just to register this that, again, Parliament's comment was made available to the Department. I think that was wrong. I think the committee will have to deal with that when we take the decisions around that. So Secretary of Parliament and also other people must explain that and account to this standing committee. Chairperson, just one or two points here. I think what we heard from the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning is trying to say that there's duplication and it's too expensive and the work has been covered already. I think they're missing the point in understanding what is an environmental commissioner. Environmental commissioner is not there to look at NEMA or the planning issues or the development planning or the big overarching national legislation that's in place. Of course, that's the department's responsibility and the appeals and everything around that. That's the big picture where you forward plan and you say what's going to happen in that area. You're allowed to build. No, you must protect the environment. Chairperson, if you look at the functions of this is, and it's not an issue only with the Department of Environmental Affairs. The Environmental Commissioner is somebody looking at the total government departments within the provincial government. And they do have responsibility on provincial and local government. And this is the issues that was raised here under urban and rural, and I think that's an important one. The second one to that is people can lodge complaints. And the third one is the environmental administration that they can govern. So what we have here is, if there's a problem within the Department of Environmental Affairs or the local government the department. Who's gonna regulate them? That's the environmental commissioner. Yes, they can make recommendations, but the moment the report is out there, people must respond, because there will be pressure for people to respond. This is where the ordinary citizens of South Africa comes in. This is where we have a problem in terms of health or sanitation or housing or refuse. In local areas, that's a major problem, environmentally impacting on the health or any other condition of the people there. There was even reference by the department referring to economic issues and things like that. So it's a very broad line. It's not trying to take away their appeals, their approval, nothing. It's a commissioner that will look broadly, looking and listening to the people of the Western Cape and see how they can facilitate environmental issues and problems and complaints. And they do have issue around local government, and it's not correct to say they have no say on local government and they have say around a provincial government. I don't think they need and they want, and the intention was to have any authority over the Minerals Act or any of those legislation. That's not the issue. That's the department. That's your national department. It's where it really on a day-to-day touch the lives of each and every citizen within this province, whatever, however we define environment. I think we've heard a very narrow definition within and coming only from within the department. That's why the constitution does not state the MEC for Environmental Affairs must appoint this person. The premier must appoint, because it's a cross-cutting person that will look right from the previous side through housing, through human settlements, through all of the departments of local government. To state that there's mechanisms in terms of legislation that can remedy it, that's fine. When there's an instruction to the department, they must use the legislation to remedy. But this is this in-between person who's going to play a very important role with the community. It's the interaction between government, meaning as they call it the environmental administration, government, and on the other hand the citizens, like the police ombudsman, between the institutions and on the other hand the ordinary citizen, almost like an open door walking in facility to address the major environmental issues. So Chairperson, we will discuss this. That point was not addressed, and I think that's the main point that the department missed today. Thank you.
Honourable Dagmore, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if my apology was tabled.
No,
but
it was not.
But I had accepted an invitation to speak at a school, and it was difficult to get out of that commitment. So thank you.
I hope not during school hours.
Well,
class time.
It was by a history society that did it during break time.
Good.
And by the way, they had a serious problem with your registration poster, but I won't talk about that. Thank you. I just want to pick up from what Member Ace has said in the presentation by the officials on slide number 5. The point is made that the provincial parliament may replace, amend or repeal the constitution if it concludes that the commissioner is no longer desirable, and secondly that such decision is dependent on political and policy considerations. And then basically the two reasons given for it being undesirable are the so-called duplication and then the consumption of state resources. But then on the last slide, I think there's another argument made. It says, will not address governance gaps. So in the first, the slide 5, the main two reasons given are that there's duplication and that it will consume scarce state resources, and then there seems to be another addition here that it will not address governance gaps. So I presume those are the three arguments that are being made. Now, I think what is correct here is that this decision about whether or not to have an environmental commissioner is dependent on political and policy considerations. And, you know, this provincial constitution, I might remind members and officials that are here, was actually drawn up by all members of the Western Cape Legislature at the time, and that included representatives from the various political parties. And it's clear that in this provincial constitution there are two provisions which in some way could be regarded as unusual in the sense that there aren't similar provisions. And that was the Children's Commissioner and this Environmental Commissioner. And there were very clear reasons that those proposals were made at the time. And even though different political parties didn't necessarily agree on all aspects, the Constitution was adopted and it was certified by the Constitutional Court. And you would recall, Chairperson, that about 3 years ago, the Department of the Premier initiated a process where there was also a proposal to amend the provincial constitution to make the appointment of both the Children's Commissioner as well as the Environmental Commissioner for that appointment to be discretionary. And you would recall that in all the public hearings that were held, there was a very, very strong sentiment against that discretionary provision. In other words, people wanted the Children's Commissioner to be appointed. And although the number of submissions in regard to the Environmental Commissioner were not as many as those in regard to the Children's Commissioner, the majority of those submissions that were made then in a very extensive public participation process also opposed the proposal that the appointment of this commissioner be discretionary. In other words, people said we want both a provincial children's commissioner and we want an environmental commission. I think essentially the main reasons were, and I mean I take all the subsequent legislation that is being referred to by the officials in the presentation, but the basic motivation for having an environmental commissioner was to say that one of the most important assets that our province actually possesses is our natural environment, in terms of the Fynbos kingdom that we have, which is very unique to our province in regard to our coastline and in regard to the natural environment. And I think there were very serious concerns expressed, particularly in regard to the situation at the time, that very often decisions get made on the basis of duress and all sorts of undue pressure being placed on provincial government by the officials. And given the importance of the tourism sector, given the importance of the environmental sector, there was an agreement amongst all political parties at the end that we needed this commissioner. Particularly as Member Ace is indicating, this is a commissioner who would not be an executive authority, but would be an independent, impartial person to whom complaints could be issued. Now, if you look at all the legislation that is being referred to here, the MEC or the National Minister, you know, are able to conduct certain investigations, but this environmental commissioner actually stands outside of government, is a place where you can complain. Just like the Chapter 9 institutions that are contained nationally, they are independent of the executive. So I think we need to remind ourselves about the original motivation that was made, and also ask a question, and that does come down to a political consideration. Why then, after that first round of public hearings, did the Department of the Premier eventually agree, although we're still sitting 9 years later after the promise made by the Premier, we still don't have a Children's Commissioner, although there's a process, we're not quite sure when that process will be concluded. Why then, when the members of the public motivated for an Environmental Commissioner, why are we still having this situation? Because I don't believe that the arguments being made here, the duplication and the consumption of state resources, this is independent body. It's not, if I can just conclude. So we are effectively not wanting a spotlight on those situations in our province where there is an abuse of a degradation of the environment, which impacts on future generations and on tourism, and we need this independent voice. If you look at the submissions that have already been made online post the publication of this bill, they overwhelmingly are in support of the need for an environmental commissioner. And I think we need to understand this is a place, an independent body where people can complain, reports need to be provided to Parliament. It's an oversight. It's effectively keeping a watching eye, which is important for our province. So I'm very disappointed that despite the provisions and despite those public hearings on which money was spent, that we're still being confronted with a proposal to make, to not go ahead with the environmental commission. It's against the majority viewpoints on the public participation, and it's against what the original idea was by those that drafted this constitution at the time.
Thank you, Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. And I'm glad Member Dagmar was speaking to students this morning on history, over history class. If I can go just a little bit back to on page number 4, which I think is slide number 8, and the history of where this bill has come from, which is 2001, and we're now in 2019. And I wasn't here in 2005 when the standing committee was briefed, and then the minister made the decision in 2005 to request the suspension of the establishment of the commission. I wasn't there at the time. I don't know what informed the then minister. And in 2007, I requested the delisting of the Commissioner of Environment as a Schedule 3 public entity. That's in slide number 9. Based on the promulgation of national legislation. That was in 2007. And we know that the minister was at the time, but he's so. And fast forward to 2009, and then if we look at slide number 14, I'm going to get to the point now, Chair, sorry, page number 28, slide number 28, page 14, the different pieces of legislation. So I can understand why the drafters and the standing committee at the time in 2005 and the minister in 2007 requested for the delisting of it, because there was national legislation promulgated to deal with matters. So when you are a parliament, or at the time the executive, looked at what was the functions of the national or the provincial commissioner for the environment. So those individuals were there in 2005 and 2007. Made a decision based on the information available to them at the time to say, let's shelve this idea because it doesn't make sense at the time, 2005 and 2007. Fast forward to 2014, 2015, and I was part of this committee, Chair, at the time when we did the public hearings, and obviously Member Ace was not part of the committee, and he's obviously sitting as an alternate members, and those of us who have been in these briefings for the last 2.5-3 years, briefed by the department, and I think the department is pretty familiar with what the Commission of Environment was. I just want to thank them for the work they've done in setting it out in such chronological order for us to understand where it was, and for the public hearings they had, and the input given to us today clearly outlined as to reasons why there should not be a commissioner for the environment, and we can discuss it in committee, and we'll just go through on formal processes. If one were to go look back to some of the reasons they've given, to the powers of the public protector, to the municipalities, to the Public Protector Act of 1994, the Public Finance Management Act of 1999, so one can understand the accountability measures that has been put in place, the new legislation that has been put in place, and the responses to the public from slide 47 up to slide 61, and the conclusion that they made. And one has to look at the cost to government. I mean, we're in a difficult economic environment. To spend 12 million rand a year where functions are duplicated by national legislation. And I have to applaud the national departments looking at what was missing in legislation and then drafting the legislation, and now us want to duplicate already things that are covered in national legislation. It is going to be a waste of money. Not particularly, that would not be my main argument, but the argument is several pieces of legislation has been drawn out over many periods, looking at the drafters of the original legislation in 2001, 2005, 2007, and the reasoning for suspension and postponement of this legislation. One can understand why. And the subsequent legislation that was drafted, and we'll discuss it in committee, but I'm I fully appreciate and understand what the department is saying, and I just want to thank them for giving it in such good chronological order, including the legislation covering specific aspects that the original drafters were thinking, and obviously 2005-2007, the information that required them to suspend and postpone the process on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any other questions?
Chief, could I just ask, there's another comment, just a question. The inputs that were referred to, if you look at the document entitled Technical Amendments, there's...
We've dealt with that.
Okay, are we going to get copies of all this stuff?
Yeah.
We're going to.
Okay. Over to the Honourable Peter.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the whole concept of development, it has been said that development isn't clearly defined in this specific talk, but the commissioner is supposed to monitor development, especially if it is impacting, especially negatively, on people. My concern is when we speak about development, rural and urban, it has to do with spatial planning. Are we only looking at structural development, concrete structural development and infrastructural development, or are we looking at people-centered development as well? I think Member Ace referred to especially what's happening in local areas, local government with refuse and sanitation and health, etc. Are we looking at the well-being of people, because that is development per se also. The lived experiences, how people experience life, how development impacts on them, or non-development for that matter, if things remain the same. So I would like to have an answer on that specific question, because it is critical for me, because especially in terms of rural development, what are we looking at? Thank you so much.
Member Ace, last input, thank you.
Jefferson, thank you for that. Two things. You created the impression in terms of that section 3 of the PFMA that has now been abolished and entitled. That's just to create an entity or not create an entity. It's a non-issue. The second one was, I never referred to development, I referred to environment. And I think what's leading us in terms of the environment is the Constitution. And I think it's important that we put that on the table. The Constitution, environment. Everybody has the right to an environment that is not harmful to their health or well-being. Health and well-being. To have the environment protected to the benefit of present and future generations, prevent pollution, degradation, promote conservation, and so we can carry on. It's a very broad concept, and that's what I try to say. It's not a narrow concept vested only with the Department of Environmental Affairs. It's a broad well-being concept within government, and that is a very important role that the Environmental Commissioner will play.
Okay, thank you. As you can hear, you've had a lot of comments. So you're welcome to take those comments. I think there was one or two issues perhaps, if you want to respond, but there's a lot of comments where we will discuss in committee, and I think there were one or two questions on this matter, but I don't think there was any magnificent issues that needed requirement. Remember, Dagmar, I did hear your points that you made, and I'm going to try to put it as diplomatic as possible. When you were not here, some of them has been raised for the first hour and a half. So, and we dealt with it extensively. And I wouldn't want to put officials through a process where they have to redo what we already discussed for the first hour and a half. So, if you don't mind, perhaps some base will brief you after the meeting. To the officials, if there's anything that you feel that you really needed some clarity, but a lot of it was input, and a lot of it that we as a committee will discuss on the way forward.
I'll just clarify one one or two things on remember is the economic development that we put on the side, so that actually comes from the Western Land Use Planning Act, with like you said, the minister needs to monitor economic development. We do embrace the wider definition of environment that is in all pieces of legislation, and the IDPs, the SDFs, it takes people into consideration. There is a definition for environment in the National Environmental Management Act that includes land, water, atmosphere, the humans that exist and that are made of, and also the physical, the chemical, the aesthetic, and the cultural properties and conditions of the foregoing that influence human health and well-being. So, for example, in our waste management, the provincial waste management plan, the impact on humans is taken into account. Just on the issue about the decision that was taken in 2005 and 2007, and why that only refers to the national legislation, was because the provincial legislation wasn't enacted yet. So it would then be supplemented post-2014 by provincial legislation, like the Special Planning Management Act and the Western, specifically the Western Cape Land Use Planning Act.
Maybe, Chair, I can just add, yes, I think it's very important to understand that our definition of environment is a very anthropocentric focus, meaning that environment for the people. Doesn't mean that you degrade the environment, because you actually need a strong protected environment to enable it to provide the continued resources for quality of life. But that's why the presentation focused on both development and environment, actually also showing that the two is very interrelated, especially considering our constitutional mandates. And that's why we focus on both the planning and the environmental mandate, because of that very strong anthropocentric focus. And that's also, if you look at all of the IGR structures, MINTEC, MINMEX, and if you look at the medium-term strategic framework, and if you look at the integrated implementation plans, all of those focus not on a biophysical environment, but on a very socio-economic, socio-ecological context for development and environmental management. And in all of the IGR structures reflects that complexity of looking at development and environment in one. So I think, and also then the reporting structures that have been set up, it actually also reflects that level of complexity and interaction between a broad definition for both environment and development.
Thank you very much. Members, I'm going to take this opportunity to thank both departments for briefing the committee this morning. Thank you very much for the detailed presentation. Thank you very much for answering the questions and for taking note of some of the expert comments made by the members of this committee. We really appreciate the time and effort. You are now free to leave. Committee, if you can stay behind so that we could do our committee admin. I think there's still some refreshments at the outside that you're more than welcome to help yourself. Thank you very much. Report to the agenda for adoption if time allows. I think everyone's got a copy of that. Okay, members, we obviously have now been briefed by the various both departments. So now we need to decide on public hearings, because obviously we need to go out and get public hearings on this bill. Member Gopi, was your hand up?
Yeah.
All right. The committee coordinator, that is the next step we now need to... Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. If we can just perhaps, as Member Ace earlier indicated, get the comments from the department and the submissions, from Parliament, the submissions from Parliament, if they can submit it to us in the committee so we have a look at it. And second of all, if the committee coordinator can perhaps go back and look, because we were at some places the last 2 or 3 years, and just go look back and where we were, because now we're in the West Coast and the Karoo and the East Coast, and perhaps just look again, and as a committee we just need to decide if we are going back to the same places or different places in those regions. For example, we were in Beaufort West, we were in George, I think we were in Vredenburg or something. Do we now go to Vredendal? Do we go to Oudtshoorn, and do we go to Nathan, I suppose, to George. I think it's the committee can just look at that, the committee coordinator, and then if each committee just decide, do we go back to the same places or do we go back to a town next to that place? I just wanted some clarity, but you can give us guidance. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Members, if I can propose, in the interest of time, that we get the committee coordinator to gather that information, and then if you could send it to us by email, and then with the next committee meeting, which is on the program, I think it's on the 12th of February, if we could come back and then just confirm where we would go. Obviously, there's members you would just need to bear with me, because there's obviously the parliamentary program and things that we need to take into account, but we'll can discuss that in detail on the 12th, if that's in order. Honourable S.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to, and hopefully you will accept this, to give the Secretariat a bit of help as well, let us just establish a principle, because it's an amendment to a constitution. I mean, it's not nothing,
yeah.
It's a big thing. That we at least visit each of the six regions that we have. I think the committee can engage which areas, as was explained by yourself. That's fine, but at least get to the people as close as possible to the community. And I would just like to ask that you did confirm that we will get the information as submitted to Parliament. I think that's important that we get. And I just want to add to that, I think we need some explanation, Chairperson, from the Secretariat or the Secretary. Why was the information that was received after the 12th of September, and you know, that was now a different process, why was that given to government, meaning the Department of the Premier and Environmental Affairs? I mean, that's the ownership of this committee, and we engage with that, and if you can just get an answer to that as well, please, Chairperson.
Okay, I will do. I was, during the meeting, told by the, or advised by the committee coordinator, I, in fact, gave permission, so I will go and check my records, and then I'll come back. So if there's, as a part of the trade board, this is non physical act, so it's not the, you know, the Secretariat, apparently I did. If you can just...
tell us, come back to us.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I just can't deny or confirm it. but I would have done it in writing if it was. Yeah, okay. All right. Members, I agree with the coming back with the identification of the areas, and I think it's important that we take this public participation process seriously. I mean, everyone knows from my side this is not a tick-boxing exercise for me, so we can then confirm that on the 12th of February. All right, thank you, members. Members, then we move over to the draft committee meeting. I think everyone's got a copy of that. On Friday the 23rd of November.
The minutes,
didn't I say that? No, this was the meeting of the 23rd. Okay, page 1. Page 2. Any edits or amendments?
No.
Proposed and seconded. Honourable McKenzie and Fujita. Then
A quarterly report,
but I just want to also, just for the record, state that the committee resolutions, the resolutions was emailed to all members on the 23rd of January 2019. So members, you have received that. Okay, let's move over to the quarterly reports. July to September 2018, page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4.
Let's get clarity on the 20th page. Oh,
page 5. Members, please check your attendance.
Yeah, the 21st of August, because I see there was no stand-in member for me, so I'm just looking. concern, if they can just double check that, please, because see, there was no stand-in person, so there would have at least be a stand-in person. August, yeah.
Alright. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. Members, can I please ask that you take note of the budget and the balance of the budget in light of the proposed public hearings going forward. Just have a look at that. Alright. Any edits or amendments? Proposed and a seconder. Can we adopt? Honourable Gopi and Honourable Kibido. Thank you very, very much. Members, Honourable Dagmar.
Can I just ask a question, and I'm not sure whether this was covered in the first part of the meeting, but I think every member of this committee is aware of the fact that over the last week the Premier has been calling for a tax boycott. Now, I'm very, very concerned. We are members of this committee. I think we are owed an explanation as to whether this is her personal view, whether it's the view of the provincial government, and it has major implications for the confidence in this government or not. I would like to propose that we actually arrange a meeting where the Premier can clarify these particular issues. I want to formally make that proposal.
Okay, there's a proposal on the table. Honourable Mackenzie.
Well, the Premier says the daughter is not official government policy. Member Dagmar can raise it in a letter to the Premier if he feels so strongly.
Chairperson, just look, I mean, obviously if you're not agreeing with it, then we'll just record that and inform people that you don't want this meeting. But the reality is it's not just Twitter. Detailed information's on the radio, detailed motivations around this issue. For me, it is a policy. It's a very serious policy issue. If it was just a tweet, you know, maybe one, but it's gone way beyond that. And I think this committee deserves an explanation. And that's, so I'm proposing, if it's not supported, then let's record that it's not supported. But I would formally like my proposal to be put. We ask if there's a seconder. If there's not a seconder, there's not a seconder. Thank you.
Honourable Mackenzie.
Chairperson, that's not a policy of the government of the West. Okay. So I don't think it's anything to do with us.
Alright, Honourable Ace.
The Premier speaks on behalf of the Western Cape government. She appoints the government. She's the government. So let's not go into that argument. Rather have a different argument. But that's not the argument. I think it's important. I want to support the Honourable Government.
Chairman, we have not received any official communication from the Western Cape government, so there's no government policy. I'd like to propose that the members can raise it in the House by a motion, and I support a second motion that we do not discuss it in this committee. Thank you.
Now we have two proposals on the table, and we will have to go and vote now.
Okay.
Those all in favour of, I'm going to do it as proposals were raised, so all those in favour of Honourable Doug Moore's proposal. All those against proposal 1.
You need to come back.
The meeting is adjourned.
You're better. Yes. It's not
going to
be the same, right?
You're going to miss me.
You're going to say, what did you work? Just leave it to you for the government, then you're gone.
You just say it. Me now, because of you, you're going to go. I'll take you to say the West-Africa regering, say us with all the belasting.
No, just have
to
say
it. As you president praat, then I was all over.
Yes.